You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. We're back at it again with another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and we are joined today by the beautiful V-Fig
on the mic, as always. Yes,
it's been a busy day. I think I say that with every podcast, but yeah. It's because we try to put a couple different episodes together in one day, and we try to use our Sundays as much as we can for recording. So if my voice sounds a little like hoarse, I'm trying to drink some water here.
You're like five water bottles at the same
I think we should be good. But how's everything?
Everything's good. We just wrapped up another show earlier today and now getting ready for our next one. So, I mean, I think I'm good with water, but I am definitely ready. I'm alive this time, unlike most episodes where I'm usually tired. So.
Awesome. So we have a guest here with us today. And before I introduce her, I want to kind of talk a little bit of how I got, how I discovered her. So I was back in the day, I think I talked about this in the podcast before, is that I used to have a radio show for college. It was one of my requirements for my major, right? And we used to have the show, and it was called Sofrito, right? So Sofrito is a Puerto Rican base for cooking that we use all the time. It's usually, I want to say most of the time, in a green looking format, sometimes red. You might find it in all your fruterias or your carnicerias that you shop at, right, in the city. So we named it Sofrito because it was talking about kind of the same thing that we do here in the podcast, talking about Latino stuff. And then it was the only radio show that had salsa music at the university that I was at.
So I'm sure you were super proud of it, right? Everybody could hear.
So I was going through nostalgia, and I wanted to see, like, some of the old pictures. So I Googled Sofrito, and then a picture came up of our guest here today. With the actual sofrito, but it's called Sofrito, and it's available in Whole Foods. So we're going to actually go and talk a little bit more about it. But today we have with us Jessica Holmes, who is part of Soul Boricua. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
good. Thank you for joining us today. I know it might be a little bit out of your way here in the north side of Chicago. But
it's all right.
Welcome to the Beaumont Cragen neighborhood. So can you tell us a little bit about Soul Boricua?
All right, so Soul Boricua started about 5 years ago. Okay. It started as a catering company. So me and my sisters, it's three of us, me, Cecile, and Lily. We are both Puerto Rican and African American. Okay. And so my mom is Puerto Rican and my dad is black, obviously. And so my sister came to me one day. So a little back history about me. Mm-hmm. I have an associate's degree in culinary arts. Okay. And then I went and got a bachelor's degree in hospitality management.
Okay.
And then, of course, because I'm an overachiever, I kept going and I went and got a master's in business. Wow. And I'm currently working on my PhD in business psychology. And so my sister's like, yo, you got all of these degrees. Like, mm-hmm. we should be doing something for ourselves as opposed to continue to work for other people. Mm. You're using all that education you have to make these other businesses rich. And I'm like, you're right, you know. And I was getting frustrated with the whole for-profit scene. You know, mm-hmm. I've worked for big corporations from, like, Taco Bell to Eduardo's Pizza. Like, I've worked a lot of different places. Yeah. And I didn't like the way that they treated not only just the regular employees, but especially the Latino workers. Mm-hmm. So because some of them may not have legitimate papers or, you know, they mm-hmm. pay them a lower wage and they kind of mistreated them. And I just kind of wanted to stop working for organizations like that. Like, yeah. it just really tugged at my morals. And so I'm like, yeah, you know what? I think we should look into it. So she mm-hmm. forced me to start, like, doing the catering. She's like, you cook good. Let's use some of mom's dishes, where mm-hmm. she kind of fused my dad's soul food cooking mm-hmm. and her cooking to give a blend of these different cuisines. So it was like what we would call, you know, our cuisine, which was really just my mom fusing the cuisines together.
Nice. So we were definitely interested to see how that works.
And thus the name came from the fact that we're using soul food with Puerto Rican cooking. So it's like Soul Boricua.
I love it.
And it's funny too, because I remember when I saw the name Soul Boricua, the first thing I thought about, and I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but there was a play in college that they used to do. It was called Plátano and Collard Greens, right? Because it was a fusion of African American.
No, I haven't heard of that. Yeah, me either. That sounds so cool.
It was cool. It was a cool play about the same thing. It was a mom was Puerto Rican and a dad was African American, and they would have to do plátano and collard greens for like Thanksgiving. You had your penin, and then a lot of it was actually very similar, just different seasoning maybe, or just a different name,
most of our dishes is just fusing them together. Like they have so many seasonings that complement each other, like putting them together, just bam, it works.
That's really awesome. Right. So that's how the name came up of Soy Boricua. All of you guys are sisters, you said?
Yeah, we're all sisters. Okay. Yep, so it's three of us.
The transition of going from corporate to be an entrepreneur, how was that?
So nervous. like, you get used to a certain lifestyle and you're like used to making this type of money. And so I was really, really nervous. But, you just kind of walk in faith and say, you know what? I know that what I'm doing is it's passion for me. So, it's kind of like you're not really working. You're just kind of living because it's kind of a part of my life. Yeah. And I still work. So I still have a full-time job. Okay. Like, me and all my sisters still work as well as do the business. Wow. I'm actually an instructor at Kennedy King College. So right there in Inglewood.
Okay.
And so that's kind of me using my education and stuff in a different way where I'm actually kind of helping people more directly. And so I love it.
And you guys were born and raised in the city of Chicago?
Yes, we were born and raised on the South Side. So we mostly lived, it was really a battle for us because we mostly lived in African-American neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And because we kind of look African-American, they would just take on to us more. Whereas sometimes in the Puerto Ricans, they were like, kind of like, oh, are you sure you are, And it's like, I swear, look at my mom. I swear. And so it was kind of like that. But we lived on the South Side. Yeah. But we would represent our big Puerto Rican flags in front of our homes. Like, yes, we're a little bit of both.
That's the funny part I think I was talking to my daughter about it the other day because she's half Mexican, half Puerto Rican.
Okay.
And she always says, oh, I'm Boricua, right? And the thing is that we're so proud of our heritage, right? That no matter where you're at, you'll have a little Puerto Rican flag somewhere.
Yes.
And that's awesome that the fact that you guys were in the South Side and be able to show where your roots, right?
Yeah.
And be able to fuse it
with
both cultures together because there are a lot of similarities between both.
Oh, most definitely.
So when you guys will start cooking let's talk about just before you even got into Soy Boricua, you will still do these little dishes with the Puerto Rican flavors for your family?
Yes, all the time. And so, I want to say that's probably why my husband married me. But
probably.
We were I would, just try different things. And because my mom, would be trying to appease his, wanting some fried chicken, she'll throw a little sazon in it. And bam, it's like sazon fried chicken. And it's like, what is this? It was like these fusion dishes where it kind of all started for us. And so we just, that's one of the things we wanted to touch back in when we were starting our company. Like one of the hugest things was what the heck are we going to put on our menu? Like, what are we going to be serving? What are we going to be cooking? Mm-hmm. And then that's when we were like, well, what mom used to make, you know what I'm saying? Let's just do some of that and kind of add our little touch to it, add the touch she added to it, and see how people like it. And so far, so good.
Yeah. And does the family help you guys out with?
Oh, yes. It is definitely a family-oriented business. We, my sister's making sofrito right now. We got an order.
She's in the kitchen.
So, she's at the factory right now making
stuff.
And, my little sister helps. Sometimes my dad is doing deliveries for us.
Wow.
My mom is always helping out. My cousin is another hire. He was, one of the reasons I wanted to start the company because he worked with me at many of the places when I was managers at different places. And during that time, he got into some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up with, of course, the ugly felony on his record.
Which is hard to...
And so once he got out, he had more drive, more passion, and he was just really good customer service. But people wouldn't hire him.
Yeah.
And it was like he had this mark that stayed on him forever. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. One of the things that we focus on now is hiring people who re-entering citizens, who are trying to get back on their feet. I just feel like they kind of get shafted. Mm-hmm. And even if they do get the job, they don't get paid as much as their experience would allow them to get paid just because they have this record. And so that's one of the things on our application. We don't even have the question. If you have ever been convicted, you know, because of where we live and how things are in society, they might have been convicted. They might have a record. Mm-hmm. But why let that deter from who they are and what they are capable of? So, we hashtag eliminate
the question. I know that we've been actually, this is one of the topics that I've been having in my mind to discuss. And I don't want to segue too much into it because I have a lot of questions as far as food, right?
Right.
I'm hungry. But I know that it happens a lot, especially within the minority community, that we get pulled over for just having like a little bit of weed or something like that.
Yep.
And then you have that on your record, right? And it was nothing to distribute or anything like that. So hopefully, you know, if anybody in the government is listening to us right now, hopefully you change that shit real quick because we need more.
It's a pool for us small business owners that, you know, the government may not be changing anything anytime soon, but as small business owners, like, maybe, you know, taking the stand of like, you know, I'm not even going to ask the question. Like, I don't, you know, I don't care what your background is now. I just want you to have the passion to do what I want you to do,
That's awesome.
I want you to have the passion for this work. I think that's my little plea for a little.
And that's great too, that there's so much drive. I could sense the passion you have behind it, you know,
it feels great.
Cause you know, we share passion behind what we do as far as the podcast and not just the podcast, but the brand. And it's nice to see someone else kind of vibing off of that as well. But I saw your menu. I was looking at it a couple of days ago, and I was looking at the fusion that you guys had. You had mac and cheese with some pernil here, and it was like, yo, like, and I've never had that. So, for example, like, you might have like a dish that I was thinking, man, mac and cheese, and then maybe some pernil. I've never tasted it together, but
you have to. That's our Thanksgiving. Like, that's what we eat at Thanksgiving.
So it just blends really well together. Any special spices that you use that most people, or are you not allowed to share that with
us? I can't divulge our trade secrets. No, we use a lot of the stuff that Puerto Rican families use. We use the sazon. Obviously, we use sofrito. Then we use some, you know, Lowry's. You know, we might use a lot of garlic. Both cuisines use a lot of that type of stuff. A lot of the things we try to create as healthy as possible. So that's one of the things that we've been, that I've been focusing on, is like every month I do a healthy cooking demo in the neighborhood. I've been collaborating with an organization called Imagine Inglewood If.
Okay.
And so we do little healthy cooking demos where I'm teaching people, you know, most of the time people don't even know what certain fruits are. How do I even cook with kale? Like, how do I use these passion fruit? What is that? How do you use that?
Sometimes I go to the grocery store, and I hate going to the grocery store. I hate doing groceries. But when I go in there, I get so lost when I see, you know, all these different, you know, kale, for example.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, like, how would I use that? If I'm making arroz con gandules, you know, like, all I need is just the rice, the gandules, and then I use bacon on mine. So it's like, yo, like, how do I make that healthy? You know what I'm saying? And I noticed that too, because a lot of times Puerto Rican food is very, very unhealthy.
Fried.
Yeah.
Fried, and then same thing, a lot of salt.
So how have you been able to maybe, I don't know, add on to your menu or fix a couple recipes so that it's healthy?
Well, that was one of the reasons that sofrito, the soul frito, came about was it's actually a lot healthier than we think. Mm. And so because it's made with just kind of vegetables and blending them together, it's actually pretty healthy. But what we've done is try to give it a little twist. And instead of cooking just the arroz con gandules with it or any of the traditional dishes, using it to marinate your chicken in, right? Using it to actually be a seasoning to your vegetables instead of adding all that extra salt or all the extra additives. That seasoning is so potent that you can use it for, it's very versatile and tapping into the stuff that we already have that's actually really healthy and using that as opposed to adding all this other stuff to it.
And whenever I open up sofrito, right? So for those of you guys who are listening right now and might not know what sofrito is, it's a blend of a bunch of different vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to explain. You have to kind of Google it.
You just have to smell it. You can't Google it.
Yeah, like you have to smell it.
Well, let's just say someone is listening right now and they're stuck in like Russia or something. It's hard to explain it, but when you open it up, it smells so good, right? That you just kind of want to grab a chip and like start eating with it, but you can't. You can't.
No, it's way too potent. Like I really, especially with where we are, a lot of people are unfamiliar with it. So I've had a few people like inbox me and like, "Hey, yo, I ate it with some chips and this was nasty." Yeah. Please. And so that's why I added the blog feature to our website, because hey, there's some recipes here that you can make. make with it, because it's not something. It looks like salsa, but it's not salsa.
No, you shouldn't.
Not
eat
even
it.
Close to it. Not even like close to it. It's so potent. It's
that's funny.
But a lot of times I use sofrito on everything, right? Because I grew up like that. So we make like carne asada, like tacos, right?
That's exactly
and usually people will just put like either like salt on it, right? And then maybe some adobo, right?
Or lime seasoning
or taco seasoning. Yeah. No, I put sofrito on it and people started eating it. Well, my dad put sofrito on it. I took it from my dad. And then when people eat it, they're like, yo, like these have like a Puerto Rican flavor to these, like to the tacos. And I put it on arrachera when I'm cooking arrachera, just putting the sofrito on it. And it just adds that little extra flavor. So if you have the ability to go to any store around the neighborhood, if you're around the Humboldt Park area or even in any of the Puerto Rican areas, go to the grocery store and get yourself some sofrito, some homemade sofrito. Or now we could talk a little bit about the Whole Foods sofrito that we have set up, the sofrito. So how did that come about?
So my sister, who she actually runs a not-for-profit here in Humboldt Park called Blocks Together. I don't know if you guys heard of them.
I have.
So she's like a co-director. And so she was telling me how, you know, she loves what she does. And she's been working with a lot of not-for-profits in that sector. She's been working in that sector for a really long time. And that's basically the base of our catering clients are not-for-profit businesses. So we try to keep our prices really low to service those consumers. And so she mentioned to me that she had heard, you know, through the grapevine that there was going to be a Whole Foods in Inglewood and that they were looking for local suppliers. And she's like, this is your chance. She already had mentioned to me that we needed to sell it. Like, she's like, because we get tired of making it too, you know? So if we can go to the store and just buy it, like, that's that true, would be awesome, you know? And so she's like, we should totally put this on the market. I'm like, okay, we'll try it. Let's see what happens. And so the discussion, they had like a whole like event where, you know, get into meet and greet the local suppliers. And so we sat down, we talked to them about our product. We brought a little bit of sofrito. They opened it, the whole room obviously smelled it. Like, what is that? And they're like, yo, we want it. And I'm like, okay, cool, let's do it. And so that was like the easy part. We left so all excited. And then we had to figure out how are we going to put it in a container?
Yeah.
How are we going to make it? Labels. Like,
the whole marketing aspect.
Oh, my God. It got so hectic. Even like the day before they actually opened, we were rushing around, like finishing getting labels and stuff. It was like craziness. And so that's how we ended up with it in the Whole Foods.
And the production of it, I'm assuming it's mass production right now because you have to do...
It's not super mass production. Right now, we're only in the one Whole Foods.
Okay.
So we're looking by the end of the year to hopefully get into about 3 or 4 more.
Nice.
And then we're hoping to start online orders where we can actually, you know, ship it to different places for people to get it. Because we've already had requests. Like, we want to try it. We want it over here.
And now that it's in the Inglewood neighborhood, how have you guys been able to market it? Because we were just mentioning, it's a very highly Puerto Rican cooking, you know, it's a cooking base, right?
Yes. Necessity.
So how do you market it so that the Inglewood neighborhood starts thinking, hey, you know, I should add this to my...
So I did demos in the store teaching people how to use it. I do a lot of those, so, and they know when I'm coming. So everyone's there, you know, to taste the food and see what it's like. So that was one of the biggest things. But at this point, it's kind of marketing itself. So like someone will be in the store, they'll see it, and you got to try it. All of the employees that work there, they all have it. They put it on everything.
That's
spaghetti,
awesome,
Alfredo, you name it, they have put it on there. And so it's pretty cool that they're like using it in a different way, which is pretty awesome to me.
Is there any changes that you've made to that sofrito that's not like you're from your regular homemade sofrito?
Trade secrets? No.
Stop asking me these questions.
It's basically the similar to a traditional. We just added a little bit of something special for the soulful piece of it. But that's about it. So if you smell it, it smells like sofrito. It smells like it looks like it.
That's great.
And we're working on a red one. So right now we have the green one.
Yeah.
And we're working on a red one that we're actually going to make a spicy sofrito.
Okay.
Since everybody's using it in different aspects, we figure, hey, let's make it red, make it spicy, and see how that goes.
Yeah.
So you know, I never understood the difference of the red and green sofrito. Do you know?
I never bought it.
It's the peppers.
Not the real one.
Right? That's how I felt.
Because I always use the green one, right?
That's how I felt.
Is it just the different peppers?
Yeah, it's the different peppers. Because the peppers are the bulk of it, so they use the different peppers.
So instead of using a lot of the green ahi or whatever it's called.
Yeah, every time I was in the store, I was like, that's not so pretty, though. That's just like the store, like, general brand.
Yeah, and the only ones that I ever seen that have been, like, packaged, right? Because I always see it in the homemade, like, area,
section,
right?
Yeah.
Or maybe not at all, and you have to make it yourself at home, is the ones from Goya, which are not good at all. Not trying to diss Goya or anything like that, but they didn't have any flavor. And I'm assuming it's probably because of the additives that they add on.
Yeah, so our product is actually a fresh product. So it's in the refrigerated section.
Perfect.
And
that's
so,
But
it's because, I don't know if you guys know, but I have, like, some sofrito in my refrigerator that's been there for, like, 2 months. And I still open it. It still tastes good. I still use it. Mm-hmm. And so it has a long shelf life, even in the fresh state. So that's why we have it fresh. But, yeah, that's why the Goya brand was what made us do it. Because I'm like, man, I can't use this to make our dishes for our catering menu. No. And so we're like, we had to make it all the time. I can't. And we were having our mom make it. And she's like, no, leave me alone. This is my secret. You know, because she has her she has her secret stash that she always has. And she's like, no, I'm not. You guys have to make your own. And we're like, oh, well, maybe we should. So we started making it. And we're like, well, maybe we should sell it then, you know, because this is, it's too much trying to make it all the time.
Right.
So.
Is there any plans or in the vision of doing another product that you might be putting out?
So we have lots. So I have 10 products in my mind that I want to that I want to put out in different facets.
The overachiever in her.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Oh, didn't say that.
So I do too much. I do way too much. But yeah. So the next one will be the red one, and then we want to do a larger size because we got a little size right now. We want to go larger, and then we're working on Saison.
Like a your own custom.
Yeah,
because so, Goya has it on lock, man. Everybody,
the
I've never seen any other one. You know, to be honest,
I've seen one other one. I forgot
like
the company that makes
main
it.
Brand? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. So the issue for me was because I'm on this healthy tip, and I'm like, yo, we can't. If you look at what's in there, and I love it because I use it, but it's so salty, like. You know, and people who, you know, we look at our culture and we see that, you know, so-and-so has high blood pressure or diabetes or this or that. And it's like, well, maybe it traces back to the fact that their whole life they've been using these seasonings that have been mass produced and filled with additives to make it shelf stable, to make it last longer, and to make it more flavorful. They take some of the good nutritious stuff out and put some of this stuff in, and so that's what we're working on now.
And I know a lot of people have told me, like, in the past, so when I talk to, like, older generation Puerto Ricans, they wouldn't use sazon, they would just use achiote, right? So get the red coloring, because sazon gives you that little red coloring, stains your hands when you're using it. But they'll use achiote instead, which will give it less salt, you know. It was just for the coloring, and then they'll add all their own little spices. So that's in production, that's in the vision.
I've already, like, been doing lab testing and testing stuff out, so I'm hoping that I'm shooting for before the year is out, but probably next year it'll be when it actually comes out, because we got to go through all the testing and stuff. But yeah, that'll be a little bit easier to make because it's shelf stable. So
what's it like? I mean, you say you do this with your sisters, right? It's like a family thing, but you know, when you bring business into it, with business and family, how does that change the dynamic of your relationship that you have with your sisters and with your husband and the rest of your family?
So I've fired my little sister probably about 7 times in this process. we fight, we bicker, you know. I'm a know-it-all, so they're like, yo, you don't know it all. And so we get into it a lot.
Is there a reason why you guys are sitting in the same side, right?
Stop. I'm like, he's going to say something. I know it. It's coming.
And it you know, and sometimes it sucks. Like, I was trying to get my little sister to come here and do this today because I had my kids and stuff. And she's like, no, I have my own homework to do. Like, I got stuff to do. So I'm the one that ended up coming. And so it's like, it sucks, but then it's great because you're brutally honest with each other. You're blunt. Yeah. The things that other business, like if you were doing like a partnership with someone outside of your family, they're not going to tell you those things. Like, hey, that sucks. They're going to be a little bit more.
That's fine. And talk behind your back.
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh, she sucks. And you're like, no, oh my God, I wish somebody would have told me. Exactly. Where, no, we're going to say it all. We're going to leave it all on the table. And we're one of those families that are really, really close, probably too close, ex my husband. But we tell each other everything. And so it helps. It's been times where, you know, we're fighting, we're bickering, but hey, you know, we're out here trying to do our little business. So we gotta deal with it.
That's awesome. And just the fact that, you know, one of the things that resonates a lot is that there's a purpose behind it. It's not just making money, right. You know, it's something that you saw there was a need in the community and now you want to definitely bring it out. I noticed too on your website you have that you guys do a lot of training in customer service. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I currently work with another company in Inglewood called Growing Home. It's a farm, and they hire people and teach them how to farm. Okay. It's an amazing program. And I helped create a customer service plan for them. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping that in the next couple months we have our own facility so we can have people come in and get their own customer service certificates. I do sanitation classes, so getting their own serve-safe sanitation licenses, and just an easy way to do it in a fun environment. One of the things that I realized, especially teaching at a community college, was that I'm just like them, and so I can speak their lingo, you know, I can code switch back and forth, and so where some people, you know, might be real starch about it, I'm real chill in the classroom. I'm one of y'all. Like, I live right over there. Like, this is...
We're neighbors.
Yeah, like, don't let, because your circumstances kind of suck, make you a product of your environment. Just arise above it, and it kind of, you know, serves as like being a role model, exactly. I guess some people would say, but it's like I'm just being little Jessica. So
I like that too, because we've talked about this before in the show where, you know, we get all this experience and then we end up leaving the neighborhood that we were in. You guys are going back, literally back to where you were at, and bringing money back to the community, bringing resources back to the community. I think that's great. That's amazing.
Yeah, we definitely try to hire, you know, anytime I see someone who like need some help. Look, I can't give you a whole lot, but I can give you a couple hours. And one of our platforms that we decided as soon as we started to do the business was, hey, we're starting at like $13 an hour. Like, no one gets paid less than that. And then if their experience allows it, yeah, we'll go even higher than that, but we're starting right there. Like, nothing less, nothing smaller than that. Because, I mean, and sometimes it's made it so that we didn't make a lot of money, but it was okay because that wasn't the purpose. Yeah. It was to get, you know, I didn't want that person who came out of jail to go back. One of our key employees, like, he's an amazing guy. I got him straight out. Like, he still had his bracelet on, and I'm talking to his probation officer, and I'm giving him a chance because I didn't want him to go back to doing anything that would end him back where he was before. Right. So
what do you think has been, like, you said you've been this went back, what, 5 years, right? What's been like the biggest challenge, like, just with everything that went into this? Obviously, I know when you were like marketing, that was like a whole big fiasco, but what do you think has been the biggest challenge, just going from, like you said before, you were in this corporate lifestyle and to this lifestyle, but overall doing all of this, and we're thinking about where you're at now, what's been the biggest challenge so far?
Money.
We got no money. How do we do this?
So we decided we didn't want to take out loans. You know, we didn't want to do this. So we run all of this off of our own money. And so, and whatever money the business makes for itself. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest problem. You know, small businesses, I'm sure you guys know, it's a cash flow issue, making sure that you have enough to pay the next bill and the next bill. And so just kind of keeping those things in line, that's probably been the most difficult. Also keeping our dreams realistic, right? Obviously I have these great pipe dreams. I want to do all of this and do all of that, and it just kind of gets stuck because there's not the capital in which to do it. And then it needs to be planned accordingly, so making sure that we didn't jump the gun, which is why we're only in one store right now. We're like, let's take this, let's make sure we get our products in this store first before we move into other ones, because it can get overwhelming really fast. We don't want to be overwhelmed,
and then you get burnt out. You know, it tends to happen with a lot of entrepreneurs, to get burnt out. Now with the whole, there seems to be like a whole rise on like food trucks. Has it ever crossed your mind to starting up like a food truck using Soul Boricua and that type of fusion food?
That list of hers.
So it has crossed our minds, but that's not where we see our business going.
Okay.
So we want to stay in the manufacturing business, and you know, my pipe dream is to gain some farmland in Puerto Rico and have a direct line of products that come directly from Puerto Rico and kind of start a factory there and stimulate that economy there, not just the economy here, and like create a line of passage for products and stuff like that. So we're moving more into manufacturing. I mean, we'll always be catering because I love to cook, but like the manufacturing piece is, I think, something that not only that, but is lacking in not just Puerto Rican cultures, but in African American cultures. Like no one really is in that big manufacturing mindset. Right. And that's how you really employ a lot of people. You know, a food truck might hire like 10 people, 12 people, but a factory can hire 50, a big one, 100, 200, and where I'm hiring and employing more people.
Yeah.
And the main reason I was asking that too is because I've noticed, you know, me being Puerto Rican, cooking a Puerto Rican meal takes a lot of prep, a lot of time. So,
no idea.
And the main reason why a lot of Puerto Rican restaurants don't tend to flourish here in Chicago is because we're so used to a fast food type environment, right? And Puerto Rican food is not really meant to be fast food. Even if you have frituras like relleno de papa or like alcapurria, it still takes a lot of time to cook. So that's why I kind of asked that question of whether or not a food truck was in the mind, because I know it's a lot of work. It's a lot of prep behind it. So right now, I'm assuming even just doing the sofrito, it probably takes a lot of
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
right?
It's a lot of time, a lot of manpower. And when it's like just a small business, it's very detailed. Yeah. And you know, I'm not letting anything leave our facility unless it's like 100% perfect. So then there's that aspect, like quality control, making sure you're getting measurements right and things like that. So we just want to do it right the first time. And so we're going to take our little bitty time to get there to make sure that it's all right.
What's been the feedback so far? I mean, you've been doing this for quite some time. And I mean, obviously having this product now being at Whole Foods in Inglewood, that's a huge success story. So like, what's been the feedback from the community in Inglewood, maybe people in the Humboldt Park or Puerto Rican neighborhoods? Like, what's been the feedback that you guys have been getting?
So honestly, so in Inglewood, they love the product. Like we've been moving pretty quickly off the shelves, and that's been really awesome. So we know that we have a success model. Now we just need to replicate it in other areas. So yeah, the African American culture probably has been very accepting. Puerto Rican culture, maybe not so much. I think a lot of people felt like I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but I've heard like people like, what is this? Or these people are trying to bite our style or, you know, taking our product.
That's interesting.
And it's like, well, that, I mean, it's our product too, a little bit, half at least. And so,
but I admire a lot what you mentioned before, that you said that your dream is to have, you know, a cash flow going also to the mainland, to Puerto Rico. And,
oh, yeah.
And that speaks a lot, you know, because you could just be doing it right here and then, and you know, and take all the ideas that you got from Puerto Rico and not feed back. But I think our community, especially the Puerto Rican community, should listen to that part that says you want to feed back to the Puerto Rican, to Puerto Rico itself.
I want to have some land there. I want to farm. Like, that's been my dream since I was a little girl, like just to have that lifestyle that, because I've been to Puerto Rico a few times, and that lifestyle that that area affords, I'm like, oh my God, I want to live. How could anyone ever leave here? Like, I want cows and chickens and pigs, and I want to just live off the land. That's like, I can go outside and grab an avocado. Oh my God, like this is the life.
Right.
And so I definitely, that's like my pipe dream, is to not just to give back and come and do a business that, but then retire there and just forget about this mainland world.
Go to the beach all the time.
Yeah, just be there.
I think, you know, a lot of times within the Puerto Rican community, we tend to always think that homemade is better, or like, oh, you know, I have to use abuelita's recipe instead of, you know, somebody else's recipe. So I feel like, you know, with more, you know, hopefully with more, the more that they get to know who you guys are personally, hopefully, man, they'll start.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Like, this is her identity, right? If maybe some people are like, oh, you're stealing our thing, but your thing is a blend of two different cultures. And, you know, like, we have our six fundamentals, right? The culture, art, tradition. I think all, like, your story kind of speaks to that. So, like, I don't know, maybe I'm going too much into detail here, off topic, but I was just curious to know, like, even before maybe this whole Sol Boricua thing came out, like, how were you able, just growing up, to balance those two different worlds, like being African American and then Puerto Rican, and how do I blend it and how do I share both those, you know?
It was really hard, especially growing up, because, like, one, like, our, if you look at all three of my, like all three of us, we all look different. Our hairs are different.
Really?
Like, yeah. So like some would say I look more Puerto Rican, or some would say my sister would, or our hair looks different, or this and that. Mm-hmm. And so there was that battle of, do we even look like we were supposed to look? Mm-hmm. And then just growing up, because my dad was the more dominant one in our lives, we lived in African-American neighborhoods. And so my mom would come outside. And so my mom is very fair-skinned. Okay. She's got brown hair. Like, if she didn't speak, she has a thick accent. But if she didn't speak, you would think she was Caucasian. And so a lot of times growing up, we would get that. Oh, you're white and black. No, I'm not. And then you have to, like, explain to them, I'm Puerto Rican. And it's like, this is what we are. So it was a struggle, I think. What really helped us was my mom's family is really close-knit. And so every, you know, holiday, we would all be together, and we would all get in touch more into that Puerto Rican side of our lives. And that was really awesome. And so we would be able to fuse both of them together and, like, take a little bit from both. And I think it really helped us. I mean, it really helped me a lot when my older sister started doing more work in this neighborhood in Humboldt Park. And so, you know, being in touch, her being more in touch with
this,
it was like, oh my God, you know, this is a side we probably neglected, that we were neglecting, and so now we can tap more into it and, you know, get more history and understand more, and so.
And I was talking to a friend of mine who's half African-American, half Mexican, right, and he grew up mostly on his African-American side, right, And he mentioned, you know, it was very hard because you don't feel accepted in either side,
like,
right?
Yeah.
So now he does a lot of work with the Mexican community, like really, really big into it. He speaks Spanish completely. So a lot of people look at him because he looks like he's black.
Right.
And they're like, whoa, like, you know, who are you? Like, why are you speaking with a Mexican accent? But you could tell that in the work that you guys do, it's that one where you want to show off that you are Puerto Rican and you are African-American and you know about the culture of both sides. And I think I applaud you guys for that.
And then one of the cool things when we actually went to Puerto Rico, and then we go and we see the people, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, hey, they look like me. Like,
yep, exactly. I've seen that a lot too, especially if you go over to like certain parts. Like, my mom's from Ponce, you know, Ponce, Loíza. So there's a lot more darker, people have more darker features in that area because it was the area where all the slaves were at for a very long time. So that whole area is a lot more darker than you go to San Juan, and it was like completely different. And you could sense it in the island itself.
Yeah, you can see it. But it's difference. Almost, and one of the interesting things that I discovered learning more about myself, but it's the same dynamic. Like, in African American cultures, there's this light skin versus dark skin dynamic.
Right? Yep.
It's the same thing. It's just a different dynamic. It's in a different culture, but it's all it's all the same. Like in this mindset of, oh, maybe light skin is better than dark skin and things like that. So it's interesting how it like transfolds. And it's interesting you guys talk about like the region and where everybody's from. I recently did one of those DNA ancestry things, right?
So
where it says like where you're from, and it was so cool because obviously it says I'm 50% from Africa, and it shows you where you are from. And then as far as like the Puerto Rican culture, there wasn't any like you're Puerto Rican. It was more or less who inhabited the area in which.
Right, that's so interesting.
In the area my mom is from, it's mostly they were inhabited by Germans and Italians and Spaniards.
Which area? Do you know which
Aguadilla?
Area? Aguadilla, okay.
So it was interesting to see that come up in this DNA test that they, it's like 6% that, 7% that. I was like, oh my God, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks that it doesn't go back to like, well, you're Puerto Rican. It goes back to who inhabited the land at that point in time. When,
or Taino.
Not even that.
It's hard to trace it back. But.
And even Native American, they got like maybe 7%.
Wow.
That I was 7. I was like, well, I think I'm a little more, but we'll see.
So we've definitely talked a lot about a bunch of different topics, and I love it, though. I love the fact that we're able to, it's not just about food, and I think a lot of times, and the reason why we wanted to have you here is because food tends to be the root of a lot of conversations and of our culture, right? So you start looking and you start looking at certain food that we eat and you understand where they came from. So you start understanding who you really are. Right. So, for example, I don't know, I could use a bunch of different examples, but, you know, if you go and you look into, you know, why do we eat habichuelas or why do we eat rice, you know, you start kind of capturing where it comes from. You know, this came from the Taínos, you know, this is the only thing that we still have. But, before we end the show, I kind of wanted to ask you, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years, where do you see Soul Boricua?
I'm hoping in 10 years that it's a brand that is more than just the sofrito that we have, mm-hmm. that it's a brand that is, like, worldwide.
Yeah.
Almost like Sazón, but different. I mean, Sazón Goya, but different.
Yeah.
Like, just being, like, this healthy version of our cooking, our cultures, mm-hmm. and just being able to employ thousands of people so that we can, you know, kind of be ethical in how we deal with our people and our businesses.
And any advice that you could give to anyone right now that's perhaps thinking about starting their own business?
Just do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You might as well just jump in face first. Just do it. I mean, you're not going to have any money. It's okay. You don't have any money now. Like, just do it. Just go for it. I think that's the best advice.
Awesome. And then, you know, if anyone wants to follow you or wants to get some, wants to get the sofrito, where should they go?
Soboricua.com. That's SOLBORICUA.com. That's like the hub of everything Soboricua.
Okay.
And so you'll find out that the blog is there, the catering menu is there. And if you wanted to get in touch with us via Facebook, we're on Soboricua on Facebook and Instagram. So we have both of those.
And check out their sofrito, which is on the Inglewood Whole Foods location. Make sure you go online and share and follow all their stuff. Awesome, mi gente. I wanted to say thank you so much for coming and joining us today, talking about food, which has gotten me hungry now. But thank you so much for joining us. You know, it's something that we definitely want to showcase what's coming out of Chicago and what's here and what started here, right? Mi gente, if you want or if you can, please like and share our page, which is available on every social media outlet as at LaVerdadLTD, or check out our website at www.laverdadltd.com. Once again, thank you so much for coming by. And
we hope
you guys get to mass produce it and sell it everywhere and all the Whole Foods that you can. All right, mi gente, peace and God bless.